Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go on a Tuesday loaded show. This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. We are live in Los Angeles on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. So many good football stories today. So many good stories today. Joy Taylor is joining me. Chris Broussard later this hour. Joy, how are you?
Great. Good morning.
Good morning. You know, here's the way it works. I was with my daughter this weekend in college. And when you're young, you have so much growth, right? I mean, you're just figuring out the world. And it's the same for athletes. Tom Brady, you know, when Tom Brady's 22 years old, to Tom Brady being 26 years old, he improves a lot. But by the time Tom Brady was about 33 years old, this is now what he is. Drew Brees is not improving. Same with LeBron James. He came into the NBA, and LeBron, by about his seventh or eighth year in the NBA, you can make granular changes to your low post game, but it's established. Your ability to grow massively is over. So yesterday, Paul Pierce, a broadcaster, came out, and he goes, ready for my hot take. By the way, sportscasters, stop worrying about if you have a hot take. Have an opinion, 3 hours to fill. Our comments don't matter anyway. We're just sportscasters. He says Zion Williamson is already a top 50 current basketball player in the world, Paul Pierce. Folks, that's not even a spicy take. That's not even a tempered take. That's baby food. Top 50? Of course he's a top 50 player. The question is he a top 20 basketball player in the world? Okay, all you need to know is this. USA Today, before the season started, came out with a list. They came out with a list of the top 50 NBA players. Gordon Hayward was 31 and Brandon Ingram was 33. Steven Adams, TJ Warren, Kyle Lowry, Harrison Barnes, Draymond Green. You don't think NBA teams tomorrow would trade those players for Zion? I mean, you really think today Gordon Hayward, Zion Williamson, who's better? Really? Zion Williamson is 285 pounds. Gordon Hayward could play with dumbbells in his shorts. He's a super quick, super athletic, 285 pounds. By the way, you keep telling me he's overweight. I've never seen a guy in my life carry 285 pounds at 6'6 and look that ripped. This is an all-time talent. USA Today's top 50 list, there are guys on that list I wouldn't want if you gave them to me. This kid's averaging 22.5 points and 8 rebounds this year. Less than 13 shots, under 30 minutes a game, in a strict college system with lots of mouths to feed at Duke. He's also, like I said, with LeBron or Tom Brady or Drew Brees, he is massively improving month to month. Do you know what he's averaging since he got hurt? 28 points, 9 rebounds, and shooting 70% from the floor. In this one season alone, and college basketball seasons are short, they're like 40 games, he's already a different player from pre-injury to post-injury. He's giving you 30 a game now, under 30 minutes, shooting 70%. He's shooting 47% on threes since he got hurt. Top 50 player. Toronto Raptors tomorrow could trade Kyle Lowry for Zion. Are you kidding me? They couldn't pick up the phone fast enough. And Kyle Lowry's a nice player. He was one of the USA Today's top 50 players. Folks, when you're seeing a young player like this, for the next 4 to 5 years, Zion Williamson, like Tiger Woods when he was 17, is going to make massive jumps. LeBron James, year 1 to year 4 in the NBA, made a massive jump. He went from a bad defender to an excellent one. He went from couldn't shoot a three to starting to be able to hit a three. Zion Williamson, within this season, has gone from a 22-point-a-game guy who couldn't really shoot to a 29-point-a-game guy, 13 shots a game, who's shooting 70% from the floor. Here's the night that... So I started listing players this morning. here's who he will not be better than next year. And for the record, my gut feeling is he's going to be better than most of these guys in 3 years, but he will not be as good as LeBron, James Harden, Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, Joel Embiid, Steph Curry, Giannis, Kevin Durant, Damian Lillard, Devin Booker, Anthony Davis, Chris Paul, Luka Doncic, Nikola Jokic, Denver, Kyrie Irving, Klay Thompson, Ben Simmons, Jimmy Butler, Kemba Walker. He will not be better than those players next year. That's 19. That's it. I know he won't be as good as those players. After that, you're giving me a lot of guys. Draymond Green, really? Have you watched Draymond play this year? Kind of peaked, right? This kid is getting better. He would be, I looked this morning, the best player on 14 NBA teams. I could argue 17, I'll say 14. And he, like Tiger Woods when he was a teenager, is making these incredible leaps every 6 months. This is an all-timer. Folks, when the college basketball season started, legitimate people were arguing RJ Barrett was a better player. Legitimate people. I talked to scouts. They're like, no. He's number one. And so Paul Pierce saying top 50 player. Paul, bruh, that is not a hot take. That's not even a spicy take. He's absolutely one of the top 50 players in the world. For the record, look it up. When LeBron James, out of high school, did not play college, walked into the NBA, go back to the top 50 reported players in the NBA that year. LeBron, out of high school, was one of the 50 best players. Do you remember LeBron James' first game in the NBA? I do. 20 points, 8 rebounds. LeBron was one of the 50 best basketball players in the world as a high schooler. Basketball is not football where you have to redshirt and you have to get big and you have to get strong and you have to memorize a playbook. Basketball isn't baseball where even if you're a great high school player, ooh, can you hit a 96-mile-an-hour slider? Like, basketball, you get great fast. And there are gifts. Giannis's length. He's been that long for a long time. Zion Williamson is 285 pounds. Great passer. Excellent touch. Absurdly transcendent speed for his size. Top 50, obviously. All right. Camera back on me. I don't like those gruesome injuries. I don't like watching them. I've never seen, outside of the first time I saw it, Joe Theismann's injury. We've had multiple injuries in basketball and football the last couple of years I won't watch. I believe for the context of the story I'm going to tell, I'm going to show something, not yet, one time. That's it. There was a gruesome injury last night to the center for the Portland Trailblazers, Nurkic. He's a great player. And it was a gruesome injury, and I'm going to show it. If you don't want to watch it, because I'm not going to watch it. I don't know if Joy is going to watch it. I don't know if John and Greg are going to watch it. I am not going to watch this.
I have already seen it, so I'm not going to watch it again.
Okay, so I'm going to turn away, roll the tape one time. It's gruesome. I'm not going to watch it, and then we're not going to show it again. For anybody in my ear in the control room, tell me. It's on. It's on. He's jumping up. Okay.
You're good.
Okay, you can watch our show again. For you people on radio, congratulations. You didn't have to endure that. Okay. Here's what's so incredible and sad. First of all, it just shatters the Blazers season with this and the CJ McCollum injury. It's a bummer because Portland had a really fun team. And this, you can look at the players' reactions. Here's what's amazing. We think of the NFL injuries, right? I mean, we all like go into a season knowing gonna have five guys hurt. But basketball, because it's so star-driven and driven on one or two players a roster, has a much bigger injury problem. Gordon Hayward, first game last year, season over. Paul George, Indy, breaks leg. Nurkic, last night, playoffs done. Remember last year, Chris Paul injured? Houston up on Golden State 3-2? Completely alters the series. Kyrie Irving broke his kneecap game one of the finals as a member of the Cavs. They matched up brilliantly with the Warriors. Kevin Love hurt, Kyrie hurt. LeBron lost his finals. We also saw Andrew Bogut and Steph Curry get hurt, and the Warriors lose their one finals. 2 years ago, Kawhi Leonard up on the Warriors, game one, Western Conference Finals, great matchup, gets hurt. Warriors roll through them. Victor Oladipo this year. Indianapolis, the Pacers, one of the surprising teams last year. Oladipo, star player, really emerged out of nowhere, season over. In the last 5 years, I can argue with absolute conviction that the NBA Conference Championship and Finals have been more significantly altered due to injuries than the Super Bowl and the AFC and the NFC Championships. And this is all because of the business model. The NFL business model is not beholden, other than a star quarterback, the other 21 starters, the 25, 28, 36, 42 guys are mostly replaceable. But basketball is very star-driven. By the way, you are rewarded when the stars are likable and awesome. Steph Curry, LeBron James. But what is interesting to me is we think, just kind of intrinsically, it's the way we think of basketball. You can always depend on your stars. You have star basketball players. It's not a violent sport. In football, you get roughed up. Go look at the NBA the last 5 years. Finals, conference championships, seasons completely altered. Multiple teams because of injuries. Super Bowls? Not really. Conference championships? Not really. When you are driven by individuals, the upside is LeBron James can carry the league. The downside is LeBron James got hurt this year, and the NBA ratings are down across the board. It is remarkable how often these star basketball players, and I was thinking about this morning, you know, we don't think basketball is physical. It is 6 feet nine, 6 feet 11, 7 feet one basketball players sprinting and jumping in crowds, landing sometimes on other players. Let's be honest, people aren't really meant to be 6 foot 11. This is obviously an awful injury, but it is remarkable how often we are seeing seasons, playoffs, finals, championships altered in the non-contact sport, the NBA, more than the contact sport, the NFL.
Alarm! The willies! Heebie-jeebies! Panic! There are dozens of words for fear, but just one for an exceptional home security company to stop fear at your front door. SimpliSafe. It's the home security that makes me fear less. Award-winning 24/7 protection protects your home through it all. Blizzards, blackouts, burglars. They've won awards from all the tech experts that count. The Verge calls it the best home security. It's won Reader's Choice from PC Mag. It's a two-time winner of CNET's Editor's Choice. And a wire cutter top pick. SimpliSafe, no contract, no hidden fees, no gotchas. Keep the prices fair and honest. Thanks to SimpliSafe, fear now has no place in a place like home. Try it. Free shipping and free returns, too. Plus, a 60-day risk-free trial, too. Order now. SimpliSafe.com/herd. Be sure to go there. They know who sent you. We did. SimpliSafe.com/HERD.
Obviously, the NFL's not really beholden to one player. Brett Favre retired, ratings were fine. Peyton Manning retired, ratings were fine. I mean, the NFL is not beholden to one guy. Tom Brady will leave and everybody will be okay. College quarterback Baker Mayfield last year was impossible not to watch. There's a bunch of good young quarterbacks. But that doesn't mean that Aaron Rodgers still isn't important and the Green Bay Packers are not important for the league. At Fox, we have the NFC games. Green Bay's in the NFC. They're really, really popular. And Aaron Rodgers is wildly talented and really, really popular. That's why he's on a million commercials. So you would think the NFL does a great job with its schedule. Most people don't know this. Most people listening to my show do not know what I'm about to say. The NFL has been using computers for its schedule for years. They're meticulous. They care about it. You think, well, duh. No. Baseball until this year did their schedule on cards. I'm not joking. It was so completely unsophisticated that baseball would run many of their biggest series Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Until some smart people finally said, shouldn't we put our biggest games like the Red Sox, Yankees, always on Friday, Saturday, Sunday? Cubs, Cardinals, always on Friday, Saturday, Sunday? You never put a big series midweek. And so baseball is, you know, coming out of the Stone Ages, finally figuring out schedules. NFL's been great at it forever. They know exactly where to put Brady, where to put Favre in his prime, where to put everybody. They just figure out this is what they do better than any league that's ever been created. But I don't like their opening game this year. The Bears and the Packers start the season in Chicago. All right. You want to elevate Aaron Rodgers, right? You want Aaron Rodgers to be 1-0 and healthy, right? So Green Bay's got a brand new baby-faced coach, a bunch of new free agents, and will draft three or four guys that'll start because they have spots for it. And you're going to throw them to the reigning number one NFL defense, to the team that just won your division, and Khalil Mack was the guy that essentially in game one last year helped really reduce Aaron Rodgers' season last year. Like, I want Green Bay to be good, and I think Green Bay next year could be good, but they're not going to be great in September. They got a brand new coach and a brand new offense and a bunch of new free agents. And the new collective bargaining agreement does not allow the practice time it used to for offensive linemen. And they've got a new star offensive lineman, and they're going to draft another offensive lineman. And I would not have Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers in the crosshairs of a healthy, rested Khalil Mack game one. This makes it hard for Green Bay, which is one of the top four brands in this sport. Cowboys, Steelers, Packers. I mean, they're way up there. Yeah, I could argue they're third. This is a rough place for Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers. Remember, last year against Chicago, lowest passer rating of the season. It's the best defensive front easily in the NFL. It's the only game without a touchdown pass he played more than a quarter. And good luck. Chicago's young defense is getting better. Green Bay's got a new coach and a bunch of new kids, a new offensive lineman. Some new coaches. Oh, I forgot, an entirely new staff. They're not going to be good in September. They could be good. They're not going to be good in September. This is a rough spot for Green Bay. I would not have put Green Bay and Chicago against that team. I would have started them in a couple of teams that didn't have great pass rushes, where they could get a little momentum, put them at home, make it a little comfortable. Wow. I mean, this just feels like 0-1 to start the season. New coach, new staff, new players, new free agents.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
The New Orleans Saints feel like they got robbed last year. They played the L.A. Rams despite the fact they couldn't make any stops on the Rams in overtime of the last drive. The Saints didn't like a call. It was a bad call. The NFL missed a call. It does all the time. That's what happens in the NFL and fast-moving sports. You miss calls. I've seen it in the World Series. I've seen it in the World Cup. I've seen it in the Stanley Cup Finals. Yes, I watched that in hockey, and I've seen it in the NBA and the NFL. And every sport, referees miss calls. But Sean Payton, who, of course, we know is a member of the NFL's competition committee, has multiple proposals. They want to change the replay rules, and I want to have a replay on stuff like this. And here's Sean Payton.
There are a handful of things that we've got to be better at right now, and our best at playing and our best at coaching are spending 20 hours, 18 hours a day. Our best at officiating, it's their second job. You know, it's the only right sport that has to change. You know, with all the technology we have available to us, our fans are closer to the game. Our fans are way more in tuned and educated as to the right correct calls in the game, and we just need to be better.
By the way, NBA officials are full-time, and you're constantly complaining about them. Major league umpires are full-time, and you're constantly complaining about them. Full-time doesn't guarantee perfect officiating. You're constantly complaining that stars get the call in the NBA. Those guys make $300,000 a year, and they're full-time. We rarely get caught up in NFL officiating. This was the rare instance, a missed call. As I've said for years, late in games, refs swallow whistles. Be advised. If you remember that Rams-Saints game, the Rams defensive backs were so hyper aggressive in the second half because they were coached up, because that's what happens in the NFL. Get aggressive late, refs swallow whistles. Be that as it may, are the Saints absolutely sure that a rule change that calls more pass interference is good? Because what is the weakness of the New Orleans Saints? Their corners. Late in games, less talented players often have to grab, pull, hold to stay close to better players. I would argue in 1 year, unless the Saints nail the draft in corners, their weakness will again be corners. And their corners have to grab a little more and reach a little more and pull a little more to stay with elite receivers on their schedule. Secondly, the Saints were the last team to benefit from the sudden death overtime in 2009. They got the benefit of an overtime. Every year I pick two teams in the NFL. Every year I pick two teams that I call them pullback teams. Teams that like made the playoffs and they won't. And by the way, statistically, this is the way it works in the NFL more than any sport. Last becomes first, playoffs become duds, Super Bowl loser becomes loser, period. Last year, you remember the teams I picked? Jacksonville was in the AFC Championship. I said they're too loud, too cocky, too emotional, they'll pull back. They were awful. Minnesota got to the NFC Championship. I said series of breaks, abnormally healthy, change quarterbacks, coordinators, they'll pull back. They did. It was 2-0 last year. I could go back 4 years. I'm basically perfect on this one thing I predict. The two pullback teams. Saints are going to be a pullback team. Back-to-back years, overly emotional, endings to season. Drew Brees at the end of last year, I thought physically didn't look the same. They don't really throw the ball down the field. You lose a Mark Ingram. You got a guy retire on your offensive line. I think this team is so caught up, the city, the team, the organization, on this blown call, it will affect them going into next year. Don't give me full-time refs solve everything. They don't. If they did, you'd never complain about an umpire, a soccer ref, a hockey ref, or an NBA official. All right. I want to talk about the Raiders. So, we've kind of looked at the Raiders and mostly said, they're kind of making it up as they go. We don't know that for sure. We don't know it for sure, but it kind of feels like it. And John Gruden's a great talker. He and Mike Tomlin are the best coaches in the NFL at the podium. Tomlin could be a TV star, no question. Gruden was a TV star. So John's good at talking. My theory is, as much as I look at the Raiders as sort of making it up as they go, they have acquired Antonio Brown, Trent Brown, and Terrell Williams, and Vontaze Burfict. All can play. They have more talent today. More talent today than they did last year. By the way, they have four of the first 35 picks. I went to several mock drafts this morning. And this is what I believe is the greatest prediction of what they will draft. Keenan Williams with a fourth pick. I've been told by two NFL GMs, the Alabama defensive lineman is the best player in the draft. The Jets will pass on him, go for an edge rusher, which they need more. Their first pick will be the best player in the draft. Their second pick will be Josh Jacobs, told by an NFL general manager last week, he's the best running back in the draft from Bama. The most talented wide receiver in the draft, arguably Marquise Brown. Cousins with Antonio Brown goes 27th, according to a mock draft. And then they get a safety, which they need from Delaware second round. If you combine those with Antonio Brown, Trent Brown, Terrell Williams, Vontaze Burfict, Raiders got players. Raiders got a lot of players. My knock on Gruden talks every time he steps in front of a microphone, talks too much, but he's never said the one thing that would validate that he actually has a plan and isn't making it up. When he traded Khalil Mack, we're all like, you're out of your gourd. But the Raiders just won the Sloan MIT Award for the best analytic move of the NFL season. They got two first-round picks. Bill Belichick gave up Chandler Jones. Chandler led the NFL in sacks next year. They got a second round pick and a guard they cut. So what I'm going to do is what I rarely do because I'm awful at it. But the next 3 minutes, I'm going to do a John Gruden impersonation. And this is what I wish John Gruden. Oh, wait. Hold on 1 second, Joy. Hold on. This is not great. It's not going well initially. I'm putting on a visor. Okay.
There you go.
So first of all, he says the Raiders a lot. The Raiders. He moves his head a lot. That's what he does. Let's have some press conference sound, John.
Hey, Chucky.
Time out. Stop.
What?
That's disrespectful.
Okay.
Nobody at a press conference yells, hey, Chucky. That's ridiculous. Let's make this professional.
Strong start.
All right, so first of all, hey.
Coach Gruden, why did you trade Khalil Mack to the Bears?
Listen, I love Khalil Mack. Okay? Guy's unbelievable. Khalil Mack's a once-in-a-lifetime talent, okay? But at $23 million, that's a once-in-a-lifetime contract. And I believe if you look at the history of this league last 20 years, you can pay your quarterback that. And the Raiders, we're about building a culture. We got a lot of mouths to feed here, okay? Okay. This is the best defensive draft in the last 25 years. You got 4 elite pass rushers in this draft, okay? You got 9 top defensive tackles, okay? We looked at the sabermetrics and the analytics here, okay? I love Khalil Mack. But I got the best defensive draft in 20 years. I got a lot of mouths to feed, the Raiders. Okay, you look at the history of $23 million for defensive players. You don't win Super Bowls. Okay, and the Raiders. Okay, the Raiders here, we're into winning Super Bowls, okay? Any more questions?
Is that the first time you've used the word sabermetrics before?
I don't know what the hell I was talking about there. Kind of missed on that one, okay? That's the bottom line. So my point is...
I thought that was very good, actually.
Here's my point.
That was not as horrible as
I
hoped it would be.
Yeah, I was expecting much worse.
Here's the thing. You can make an analytic argument that in the best defensive draft in 20 years, he's got 4 of the top 35 picks. They've upgraded at wide receiver substantially. That it made sense not to pay a defensive end $23 million. That's what you pay quarterbacks to.
That's not really Gruden's style to come out and do what you just did, though.
He never shuts up at a press conference. He says he's the most glib guy ever. Could he not just say, if he said that, Joey, here's what I would do. Okay, he's got a plan. I got nothing to say. He's got a plan. If Chris Ballard said that, Howie Roseman, Bill Belichick, Sean McVay, all he has to say is, it's the best defensive draft in 20 years. We got 12 guys who are game changers. And I don't feel like paying a guy $23 million. Okay, let me go back to Gruden one more second. Just one more, John. One more quick so I can put the thing on. Okay, here's the thing. Hey. Okay, listen. At the Raiders, you don't think we want to win? You think I'm not trying to win here? We got a salary cap. This isn't baseball. That's why I said sabermetrics. I got lost for a second. The bottom line, we got salary cap here, okay? Okay, you can't pay J.J. Watt everything, okay? Got to get your quarterback to Deshaun Watson. Got to pay him everything, okay? Derek Carr's been in this league now, all right? All right, with the Raiders for like 7 years. I'm not getting him on a discount now. He's not on a rookie contract now, okay? You get that? Derek Carr's not in a rookie contract. We're not talking about Dak here, okay? Not talking about Goff here. We're talking about, I got a veteran quarterback. Got to pay him $27 million a year. You get that? Okay, baby. Antonio Brown, passing league. Got to pay him $27 million. I can't have 3 guys making all my money. Okay, got it. And I'm done with that. That's stupid.
No, it still wasn't bad. I didn't have a problem with the Khalil Mack trade. I think it just was very dramatic because it was the first thing that he did, and it's a big move, and Khalil Mack's a big name, their biggest name. I don't think he just went in like, let's get rid of Khalil Mack.
I think Gruden had a plan. All he has to do to shut everybody up is say,
I have a plan.
2-3 things. Because he talks constantly. Just come out and just say, hey, boom, boom, boom. Derek Carr's not on a rookie contract. I can't pay Khalil Mack 23, Derek 28. I'm out of money. That's all you got to say. Great draft. I mean, all of it makes sense. And I'd be like, yeah, you got me on that one. I can't do anything. I'm not going to do any more press conferences for a while. I'm going to retire officially. Okay. my press conference.
Are you emotionally exhausted from that acting
First
performance?
First of all, Goulet almost ruined it with it. Goulet came out there, hey, Chucky!
I'm sorry I didn't take this more seriously.
Talking about Joey and I are a couple of pros here, a couple of journalists.
You think that Gruden would get angry if one of the reporters started the question off with Chucky?
Yes! Yes, he would. He would be
well,
like.
I don't know. I think he has a sense of humor. I think he thinks it's funny.
I don't think it's that good when they're losing. I think his sense of.
Well, they're not losing yet.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Reggie Bush, you had the unique career. You played in USC at Glamour City.
Yep.
Then a crazy city, Party City, Mardi Gras, New Orleans, yeah. And then you went to Miami.
Yeah.
Your most productive years. We were talking about Odell Beckham, mm-hmm. and Joy and I were talking about this earlier. That. Does the city matter for players? So mm-hmm. I could make an argument. Mm-hmm. The four biggest party cities in America mm-hmm. are L.A., Vegas, Miami, and New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You played in three of them, and yeah. all your productive years
were in those cities.
Were in the party cities. So did you see teammates unravel? Why didn't you unravel? Because OBJ now is going to kind of boring Cleveland from New York. And yeah. my takeaway is, and it's not a terrible thing. So talk about your own experience.
100% I saw teammates unravel. And so I think it's also predicated on the person, like the personality, like your character, right, is going to, it's not going to change, but it's just going to maybe, if you go to a party, it may elevate, right?
Like they say about money. Money makes you more of what you are. Isn't
yes,
that the saying?
Yeah, exactly.
So a nice guy is really nice, and a mean guy is a jerk.
Yes. So, and if you had a little bit of a party boy inside you already, then going to Miami or New Orleans, then, yeah, you could get lost in the partying. But I never – it's funny because I never looked at New Orleans as a party city. And I go back to 2006 when I first got there. I got there 6 months after Hurricane Katrina. So there was nobody there. And it was a ghost town. And so one of the things that, and this speaks to Odell, I actually wanted to text him as I hadn't done it yet, but when I look back on my beginning, the first couple years in New Orleans, I wish I would have appreciated the magnitude of the opportunity that we had in front of us, because I was still stuck on, man, it's not sunny here like LA. It's, you know, there's no palm trees here, or, you know, there's not a whole lot to do here. And it took me about 2 years to really grasp that I have an opportunity to do something special here that nobody has ever done before. And that's to, one, help revive a city, restore some faith, but also win a Super Bowl for a franchise that's never been done before. If Odell wins a Super Bowl in Cleveland, he would never have to pay for a drink, food, nothing ever again, because those are some of the most diehard fans that football has to offer. I mean, they go to games every year knowing that they have no shot. Right. And now they're on one of the most talented teams, at least on the offensive side anyways,
yeah.
in the NFL. And I just really hope that he can quickly grasp the opportunity that he has in front of him.
Because you didn't.
Because I didn't in my first 2 years. And also it had something to do with Hurricane Katrina, the people not being there. And so for me, I still had the immature mentality as to, man, it's not enough to do here.
Listen,
and so when I was, sorry not to cut you off, but yeah. when I would get like 2 or 3 days off, I would fly back to LA. And I did that for like my first year, whenever we would get time off in the off season or maybe a bye week or something like that. I couldn't wait to get to LA. And then as I got deeper into my career in New Orleans, I really started appreciating the beauty of just what it had to offer. And I just hope that Odell can grasp that, because yes, it may not be as much to do as New York, but you got something special in front of you and an opportunity to do something in Cleveland that you didn't do in New York.
By the way, when you were in New Orleans, you didn't quite appreciate Sean Payton, Drew Brees, Jimmy yeah. Graham. You had a couple good offensive linemen.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is Odell Beckham should realize, I think he does, this offense for Cleveland, it's like dudes.
Yeah.
Like Kareem Hunt
mm-hmm.
and Nick Chubb
mm-hmm.
and Duke Johnson and Jarvis mm-hmm. Landry.
They got players.
Like, dudes, on offense,
yeah.
it's an all-star team.
And now you have the quarterback who has the same energy as you, right? He has that same youthfulness as you, and he plays the game like you do, right? He's in the end zone celebrating, dancing.
Right.
So I'm expecting to see a lot of that. But this is the energy and the youthfulness that I think Odell needs around him. I just hope that The chemistry's got to be right. Chemistry's got to be right.
All right. So speaking of New Orleans, they got job last year at the end of the year. They're very upset, blah, blah, blah. So they want rule changes. I'm not a big fan of the new NFL rule changes. Mm-hmm. I've always had kind of a belief on, and I'll talk about it in Best for Last. Do you think the NFL should make major alterations to replay because of the Rams-Saints ending?
Well, I don't think it should be just because of the Rams-Saints ending, because that is just – that was just one of many, right? There's a lot of times where games are more and more becoming decided by referees, and it shouldn't be like that, right? And so that play, as we're watching it right now, that is as blatant as it can get. You got two referees who are looking at this play, and the NFL has really done a good job at pushing this narrative as we're trying to protect the players more, right? We're trying to protect the player's head more. Well, you got helmet to helmet right there. And you got pass interference. You missed both of those, right? What are you looking at? Because the one thing I go back to is, as players, when we mess up, when we miss plays, we get chewed out. And if you miss enough of them, you'll get benched and somebody else will replace you. Steve Wilks got fired after 1 year, right? And so referees need to be held just as accountable as the rest of the league, as the players, as the coaches. It all needs to work together. So why this is so significant is because, for one, guys sacrifice so much year in and year out to get to this point, to get to the game before the Super Bowl, right? You sacrifice family relationships. You sacrifice business. You sacrifice a lot. Your body, your brain, you're giving up. And for that call not to happen, to me, it just speaks volumes to where the NFL has gone lately. There's been more and more no calls or calls that decide games. And it shouldn't be like that. The players, the plays need to decide the games, not the referees, not these, you know, phantom holding calls that we see a lot of times. You got 300-pound linemen that are trying to block each other. You could call holding every play if that's the case, if it's going to be that ticky-tack. If it's not a blatant, like, a guy's pulling his jersey, then, you know, what are we doing? So I think they need to definitely use the replay if it's going to mean more fairness for the game.
Reggie Bush joining us, Super Bowl champ 2009, 11 years in the NFL, number two pick by the Saints overall. I want to talk about this. So you had a kind of college career. I've said this before. There's been only about four or five college football players mm-hmm. in my life mm-hmm. that I thought needed to get a check when they left the university because of the digital and the merchandising. Mm-hmm. You're one of them. Vince Young's one of them. Johnny Manziel's one of them. Mm-hmm. Tim Tebow's one of them. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Not many. Yeah. None of the Alabama players. That stadium's going to sell out regardless.
Right.
But you four players really were an industry. You mm-hmm. were a cottage industry. You couldn't go anywhere in Los Angeles. It wasn't Leinert's jersey.
Yeah.
It was yours. And it's mm-hmm. rare, the running back over the quarterback.
Right,
and Matt
right.
was great. So there's four guys that I've thought the university should just go, listen, you made us $338 million in merchandising.
Yeah.
And I've always felt merchandising, when you get the rare player, write them a check, mm-hmm. boom. Mm-hmm. So Zion, I couldn't tell you the last college player. Maybe it's Christian Laettner, maybe Shaq, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That I'm like, oh, no, he's going to walk in to the NBA and be a star.
Yes.
You were the NFL jersey sales leader your rookie year.
Yeah.
So you know what it's like. Mm-hmm. USC was the glamour program.
Yes.
You were the glamour player.
Mm-hmm.
You were the most talked about running back maybe in my life at a college.
Mm-hmm.
So what is he going to experience? If you could sit down with Zion and say, here's a couple of things, big fella, what would you say?
He's going to experience the weight of the world. He's going to experience a lot of pressure. People are going to look to him to have these big games week in and week out. And every game they're going to be looking to Zion to be the savior of the team.
Savior is an interesting word, because you were seen as a savior type.
Yes. And if he goes to a team that's, you know, a struggling basketball team, then yes, they're going to look to him to be, he has the kind of that LeBron James factor, right? Of coming in, just his size, right? His height and what his athletic ability, you know, when he steps on the court, people watch and people notice, and people can't take their eyes away from the TV. And so he's going to experience a lot of pressure. The one piece of advice I would give him is to keep your circle small, because everybody and their mom, if they're not already doing it, are going to be pulling at you. You're going to get friends, and it's usually the people closest to you. It's never the people that you think is, you know, distant relatives or distant friends or a coach that comes out of nowhere is usually the people closest to you.
And they start grabbing.
And they start grabbing because, and if it's family members, you know, and God bless them, but they feel entitled, right? They feel entitled because maybe they helped raise you or, you know, maybe it's your brother or sister. And so those are the people that, yes, they do deserve, you know, part of, you know, the credit for the journey, but when it comes to the financial side of it, when it comes to, you know, a lot of things that players deal with, he's going to have a lot of pressure. And if I can give him any advice, I would say to keep your circle as small as possible.
How small was yours?
It wasn't small enough. It wasn't small
enough. 8, 10, 12?
Yeah, something like that. I didn't roll with a big crew.
No, in fact, I saw you one time. You wouldn't remember this. I think I was in Miami for the Super Bowl, and I was at a restaurant, and I looked over. You were in a T-shirt, mm-hmm. and we made eye contact,
yeah.
and I was like, hey, I didn't want to bother you,
uh-huh.
and you were kind of by yourself. You were in the corner with, like, a yeah. buddy, and it made me happy. I was like, Reggie's in a T-shirt. Reggie's by himself. Reggie yeah. ain't hanging out. So,
and kind of what I'm speaking to is I had somebody very, very, very close to me, extremely, as close as you can possibly, stole money from me. And it really messed up my whole world because this was a person that, you know, I was family, was, you know, he wasn't my blood related family, but he was family. And so then when it happened, I couldn't believe it and I didn't want to believe it. And it really, those are the kinds of things that happen all the time. And that's why I say you got to keep your circle small because you just never know. And it's usually the people closest to you. And God bless them. You love them. But at the same time, you have to protect your own. And that's one of the hardest things to do as a young athlete because you never want to look like a sellout, right? You never want to look like I made it and I just forgot about everybody.
Right.
You want to be the guy, you know, look, LeBron is doing a great job by he bringing his boys into business. You know,
but you know what? LeBron demands that his boys have their stuff buttoned up.
Exactly.
Rich
exactly.
Paul is a rep. I mean, I know,
exactly.
I know right. LeBron's boys, they got their stuff buttoned up.
Every young black kid or every athlete, young athlete wants to be able to do the things that LeBron James is doing with his friends. Elevate them on the business side, help them make money, you know, bring them along with them.
But they can't just be hanger-oners.
Exactly. And that's the issue.
And
is
you
that,
had like one or two hanger-oners?
Yeah, I had more than one or two hanger-oners. I had a couple.
By the way, years ago, I was in Portland. I won't name the young player. He was a tremendously gifted young player. And I did a story on him and I went to mm-hmm. his house. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the kid was from way away from Portland. He had a beautiful house and he had about six or seven guys in his house. And, you know, one or two you meet, they're grown-ups. And then I went downstairs, and two guys were just playing video games for an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. And I remember walking out of the house thinking, they're just video game guys.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and I remember thinking as I walked out, I would be so insecure about the money and protecting. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you had a couple of those.
I had a couple of those. And it's unfortunate because
it's reality, though.
It is reality.
It's life.
And it is life. And you hate it. And you hate to see other people have to go through it. I know what I went through and how much that affected me and the kind of depression I went into and the kind of things I battled mentally because this person was so close to me.
You
and
also,
he was family.
You know what? And you and Zion are also, you know, fun, joyful people.
Yeah.
I never had that problem, Joy, because I had no friends. So I didn't have any hanger-oners.
Yeah.
But Zion's the kind of kid, everybody's going to want a piece of Zion.
Everybody.
I mean, you'll watch the way he plays and the way he presents himself.
People don't want to be around him.
He is fun.
They
His
wanna,
game
yeah,
is fun.
It is. And he seems like the kind of person that he just welcomes everybody, right? And a lot of times what happens is people will take that kindness for weakness, right?
Yeah.
And people will take that kindness for weakness to the point to where they do things that, you know, that they shouldn't be doing.
Yeah.
And so that's the only piece of advice I would give Zion, man. It's just keep your circle small. Make sure you have somebody close to you that you 100% trust.
Yes.
Because you can't always watch everything, right? Like,
well,
you got to have one person that you, I mean, like your ace, like from day one, your mom or dad, whoever it is, that you completely trust to watch things for you when you can't watch. When he's on that basketball court, somebody has to be watching.
By the way,
back.
I trust moms mostly.
Yeah. Yep.
You don't hear a lot of stories about moms screwing up.
No, you don't.
You don't.
Yeah.
I'm not picking on dads. Dads are men.
Yep.
We mess up a lot. Mm-hmm. Egos.
That's true.
Not a lot of moms screw up. You very rarely hear, mom sold out her son. You're like, what? That's like a National Enquirer story.
Yeah. And you're 100% right there. I don't really hear too many of those with moms.
Like, not a lot of bad mom stories.
Dads, though.
Or dudes.
We be messing up.